There's always going to be fans who say, you know what, like, they're never going to be Cleveland. As long as LeBron's there, they're not going to be Cleveland. And that's, I think that's part of the reason you saw less numbers in Jurassic Park this year, but also because the roster is just, it kind of is what it is, and it's maybe growing a little bit stale at this point. Sportsnet Hot Stove 1022, Dan Riccio, Dave Zarum, and Donovan Bennett here as we continue the Raptor conversation. So, yeah, you guys mentioned one of the big talking points was the style of play with this team. But it does feel like Dwayne Casey, who's got 2 years left on his deal, so maybe you can equate that to 1 year. It's, if we think of the last year in a coach's contract as a lame duck year anyways, right? So it feels like Casey's going to get his opportunity to change his own style and kind of mold it to what this Raptor team wants to kind of be going into next season. But can you get a coach to change the way that he thinks and philosophizes about the game?
Can the Raptors get one?
Yeah. Or can Casey do that to the point that Ujiri wants it to get to?
I mean, that was what was so interesting about those comments at the press conference, is that how rarely do you hear guys say, we're going to completely change everything we do. We just need to, but we're going to have the same guy
pulling the strings.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a great question. I mean, Casey is... he has his own kind of style, if you want to put it that way. You know, he uses the same kind of out-of-timeout plays that he's used for the past 4 or 5 years. he hasn't really shown too much development on that end of the floor. So what makes you believe that? Also, you just think about yourself, like, is that a good position to be in, where you're just being told, hey, like, I'm going to take away your autonomy and you're going to do this now? Yeah. And I don't know if that's the situation. I'm sure it's a lot more collaborative than that. But big picture, that's kind of what he's saying, you know?
But Casey also saw the writing on the wall. Like, they go into game three, and Casey's like, you know, we need more offense. We got to start shooting more threes and all that stuff. Like, things that you wouldn't normally hear Casey say. Right. He knew what was, and I'm sure he had talked about it with Ujiri, but he kind of knows what he has to do to get better as a coach, in a sense.
Well, the math is against them. They, in the four-game series, had one more field goal than the Cavs. Cavs just hit a lot more threes and blew them out. But I feel like we've heard this before. After they were swept by the Wizards, the talk was more ball movement, more movement. We're going to be better offensively.
It's been the entire story of the Raptors for the last 3 years.
Yeah, and the rationale then was, you know, we're doing too much ISO, and we're out of balance as far as offensively, and then we're getting killed in transition instead of affecting our defense. Now, it's not necessarily affecting the defense, but they're struggling to manufacture points at the same rate as the great offensive teams in the league. Thus, they're struggling to compete. At that time, the scapegoat was Lou Williams. Oh, he's jacking shots. So what? We're not even going to offer him a contract in free agency, even though he was the sixth man of the year. We're not even going to give Dwayne Casey, like, you know, this carrot at the end of his bench to throw in there to manufacture offense when they need it. I'm taking away literally his roster autonomy and forcing him to have players who share the ball. Now at this point, it's 2 years later. We're having the same conversation. And again, if you're stylistically going to change, I just don't know how you reset that offensive culture when, you know, your best player loves to take shots from 15 to 18 feet from the basket.
Yeah. And also, I mean, it goes back to what you were saying before. I mean, you're going to base how you play off of your best player. I mean, that's just how it works. And with DeRozan, he has a very clear, it's very obvious what his strengths and weaknesses are. And if you're going to base an offense around him, it's going to be to manufacture those mid-range shots for him. It's going to be to get him the ball in the high post so he can kind of use his post-up game against other guards who can't defend that. The flip side of that is that you're not swinging the ball around. You're not manufacturing as many of those open threes as maybe you'd like. And the only solution to that might be just surrounding him with more guys whose sole job is just hang around the perimeter and
more Kyle Korvers.
Yeah, but there just aren't that many Kyle Korvers in the NBA, obviously. So it's a tough spot because... yeah, you're going to play like the way your best player plays. That's going to dictate everything. And I think DeRozan's clearly the best player. So how much is going to change with that in mind? And I think that's what's led to a lot of talk about, well, do you trade DeMar DeRozan coming off his best season?
Yeah.
I think he's shown a ton of growth. Obviously, in the playoffs, he had some stinkers. And there's, like I said, there's clear weaknesses to his game. But I also don't think there's a huge trade market for DeRozan for that reason. And if you're going to trade DeRozan, logic will say that, especially if you're not going to re-sign Lowry and you're going to look to trade DeRozan, then obviously you put 1 and 1 together and it equals blow up the team and start completely over. But I don't think you can trade DeRozan for a top five pick or those kind of assets that you need to develop and start over and go that kind of process route.
Yeah, I mean, you're plugging, you know, holes in a leaky boat.
Yeah.
Right? So the perimeter defense was an issue. So now it's much better with DeLon Wright and Corey Joseph, and Kyle obviously is an aggressive defender. You know, the power forward spot was an Achilles heel forever. Well, it's better now that you can play small and have Tucker there. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, obviously you've had Patterson, and Ibaka can start games there. And the defense in general is an issue. That's been rectified. So now it's three-point shooting, but you're always going to have warts. There are no perfect teams aside from maybe the Warriors. Like, yeah, even the Cavs have massive warts. Defensively, they're not very good. When Thompson and Love aren't on the court together, they don't rebound very well. But their strengths are so high that they really override any of those issues. And again, not to deduce this back to two guys, but the Raptors' best players don't have the strengths to carry a team to overcome their warts. But if you look at the teams still playing in the playoffs, all of them, they all have serious warts. I don't think the Raptors are any different. And in fact, when you look at the regular season, they're one of three teams who's in the top 10 in offensive and defensive rating. They're actually pretty balanced for the most part. Unfortunately, they just don't pass the ball and shoot threes, which is something that everyone has happened to emphasize in the last 2.5 years.
Absolutely. And one thing, again, going back to what Ujiri was talking about, but he almost took it out of his hands a little bit and saying, you know, with the new CBA, it's hard to switch in and out players harder than it used to be. So, like, kind of what we have is what Casey's going to have, and we have to change our style of play. But then it comes down to, can we change our style of play with the current players that we have? And from what you guys are kind of telling me here, it's really difficult to do that. So I guess the question is, can DeMar learn how to shoot the three? It seems like it's something we've talked about for years, and it's the one part of his game that, as much as he's improved so many different assets of his game and facets of his game, that's the one thing that he still hasn't added.
With DeRozan, I think people just need to accept that, like, his game is his game, and like, he is who he is, and there are very clear benefits to that, basically that he can score at will against the right matchups. But he's not a three-pointer. I don't think he's going to become a three-point shooter.
Even in the games, like, you know, like game three, he had what, 37 points, but only one of those points came in the fourth quarter. You know, like it
right. But is that about his 3-point shooting?
No, it's not. But it gets back to, again, the style of play, and like, teams can kind of focus in and force DeMar into bad shots. And in the fourth quarter, it just becomes really difficult for the Raptors to score, because the ball then gets stuck and all those different things that we've already
right,
been
but
talking about.
I think
about.
Whether or not DeRozan shoots threes doesn't change that.
Yeah.
I think I don't think DeRozan's going to become a 3-point shooter all of a sudden. Yeah, he might marginally improve, but he's already talked about, this summer I want to work on my playmaking ability and kind of finding open guys more, which suggests to me kind of the only logical option if you're going to have DeMar on your roster is, like I said before, you have to surround him with just like dead-eye shooters who know, kind of like the Cavs with LeBron, a much lesser version. But, you know, this guy's going to drive and kick out, and once we catch a ball, we're just going to launch it, and we need to make those open shots. So it's about the player. It becomes about the players around him more than DeRozan himself, because I don't think I just don't see the route.
He's
where
never going to be
DeRozan,
a high percentage.
Yeah,
three,
it's just not. So yeah, accept what you have and work with it, as opposed to waiting for him to become this player that he's not.
Yeah, I mean, I think the comp would be, you know, his good friend and Harden with the Rockets, who we never thought a couple of years ago was going to be this great facilitator because he was ISO everything, and they surrounded him with shooters. Granted, mm-hmm, Harden has a much better handle and is a threat in the pick and roll because he can shoot threes, mm-hmm, but still, it opened up, you know, his ability to play make, but also get his own baskets easier because he was playing with so much space. DeMar's 28. He had to shoot threes to stay on the floor at USC. Didn't do it. Coming into the draft process, that was a knock. Wasn't able to add the three then. He's now on his third NBA contract. Still hasn't added the three. And you're right. He has added something to his game every offseason. He's a very diligent worker, which makes it really weird. But to me, I just don't think that he's so stubborn to say, man, I don't want an extra point for every shot I take. Clearly, it's just, whether it's a mental block or a physical block, he's not going to be a prolific three-point shooter. And there's some numbers, when you look at it, his numbers in playoffs, that number gets worse, not better, over years. He is a guy who lots of teams would put their hand up for someone who lives at the line, and that's where his efficiency comes from because he's getting the other teams in the bonus. He was fifth in the league in scoring and has gotten better every year he's been in the league and is very durable. Lots of teams would put their hand up and say they take that guy. The problem is the way he plays is not conducive to playing in the playoffs because you're not getting to the line as much because fouls aren't being called as often. And you're not just playing some team who's coming into town on the second night of a back-to-back and going out to King Street. You're playing a team solely focused at taking away all of your number one spots on the floor that you want to get to and your counters. They're taking away what you do best, and that's how he lives.
And how many times did we see teams trap him as soon as he got the ball on the perimeter, double teams, triple teams? I mean, yeah, the book is out on him. So I think, it then becomes up to who's around him to help him kind of deal with those deficiencies as opposed to like waiting on him to change who he is. And then the Harden example is really, really interesting because, yeah, DeMar doesn't have his handle. He doesn't have his game. But it is that mindset of like, we can work with your style and find a way to win with it. And it's I wonder if the Raptors are going to be able to do that because I think that's going to be their only choice because, I don't think there's a huge trade market for him. I don't think you at all get better trading DeMar DeRozan because I don't think you can get similar talent back, nor do I think you can get, like I said before, a top five pick, that kind of asset to really start over and sell future hope like Philadelphia does.
But Mike D'Antoni was the guy who was able to get it out of James Harden.
Right.
When we talk about firing Dwayne Casey, my question is, for who? Like, who is the hot coaching prospect out there that really excites you? If you say you're going to promote Jerry Stackhouse after 1 year of being a head coach.
Doesn't he use Casey's playbook anyways?
Well, I mean, it just, if you're blowing it up, then I think it does make sense to promote Jerry Stackhouse because he's younger, he can relate to those players. He's coached a lot of them with 905 and done great work. But if you're looking to contend next year and you're going in thinking Jerry Stackhouse is going to give you a better opportunity, I don't know if that's smart.
Yeah. In D'Antoni, they had this kind of like visionary guy who's willing to really kind of go outside the box and try things. And Dwayne Casey's not that. And I don't know, like you said, I don't know who's out there who is that.